Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. It's Monday, November 4th, 2019. I am Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Today, we are going to talk about the Steelers-Colts game with a excellent ESPN reporter who was there covering the game. And with that same reporter, whose name I'll mention momentarily, we are going to get to the third annual Coaches Hot Seat Draft, an annual tradition sweeping the nation. And joining me to do that, of course, is our friend Dan Graziano. Dan, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Bill, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I am great. You are back from Pittsburgh after a really interesting Steelers-Colts game where I have to admit, Dan, I don't know what to make of either of these teams for different reasons. Now, part of that, of course, is the uncertainty at quarterback. But I have to admit, well, I'll just start there. In terms of how Indianapolis played in this game, granted, Brian Hoyer did throw a terrible interception, turned into a pick six for Minkah Fitzpatrick. I thought Brian Hoyer was not awful in this game for a guy coming off the bench cold.
Not at all. And honestly, the interception, I mean, is a great play by Fitzpatrick. Yeah. I mean, you could argue that he should have seen him, but Fitzpatrick makes a very athletic play to catch that ball and then run it back. It's funny, in the locker room after, the Steelers obviously very happy. Vince Williams, one of their linebackers, is shouting at the top of his lungs, "Kevin Colbert's a genius for trading for Minkah Fitzpatrick." Genius, he kept saying over and over again. So they were fired up about that. But, yeah, no, I mean, Hoyer is, like, look, a lot of these, there's like four or five quarterbacks, right, that are, like, transcendent. To win him with any kind of personnel,
right?
You know, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. Everybody else is kind of like, you know, a system guy, right? That you put him behind a great offensive line with a good running game and some good coaching, and they can perform for you. Hoyer's a veteran who's been in that program for only a couple months, but obviously, you know, he's capable, and he showed that with, you know, a banged up receiver core, and they really, in a number of ways, I think they should have won the game. Not just the missed field goal at the end, but they had a lot of opportunities.
Absolutely. You did mention that missed field goal. And I think what's so difficult in judging these Colts is you look at their performance for the year. They haven't won a single game by more than a touchdown. Every game has been within 7 points or less one way or another. But they're 5-3 with better kicking from Adam Vinatieri, who missed a field goal and an extra point, I believe, or missed two field goals and an extra point, if I'm not mistaken, in the opener. He lost to the Chargers, that they came back and made it to overtime, but then lost in overtime 30-24. And then yesterday, when Vinatieri missed a 43-yard field goal, also missed, of course, or missed the game winner from 43 yards out on the final play, had a extra point blocked. It's not crazy to think that the Colts, with, it's going to be very strange to say, even average kicking, or sort of the expected kicking from Adam Vinatieri, this team could be 7-1 right now.
Right, which, I mean, in the AFC, you know, think about that difference. I mean, 7-1 puts you in the 2 seed right now in the AFC. So, yeah, you know, Houston is obviously always going to be involved in this division race and very, usually wins it. So, yeah, you can't be giving games away. I understand the Colts' loyalty to Vinatieri, and he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's the all-time points leader in the NFL history, and I personally, I'm not going to sit here and bang on any NFL player or professional athlete who was born the same year I was. I think that's great. I hope he keeps going forever.
Yes.
But you cannot give games away, and this Colts team has high aspirations. And look, he rebounded a little bit from the early struggles, but, you know, he helped lose yesterday's game, and there might have been other reasons for it, but, you know, and look, it's a bad snap. I saw Pat McAfee on Get Up this morning talking about laces were in. Anybody who's seen Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, knows. You know, but he said, you know, when you kick the laces, if the ball stays on your foot longer, you're going to hook it. But you know, it's a results business, as we say all the time. And at this point, I'm not sure what it would take for the Colts to start looking at other options.
It does seem like, even given that there was, of course, the block, there was the kick of the laces on the final play there. Obviously, this has not been a one-week story. Even given that Vinatieri had sort of made it back to some extent from that that really ugly start to the season. I mean, he even in the ensuing weeks, he missed an extra point against the Broncos, missed a field goal against the Broncos in a 15-13 game where they very nearly needed that victory or needed that play. They missed a field goal against the Raiders in a game they lost 31-24. So that's the difference, but obviously, you know, made some games tougher than they had to be, or might have influenced some of the late game calculus for the Colts. And, you know, I don't, I don't know what you do. I think it's tough to sit here and I don't know if you can really cut him, but we've already seen this year that Adam Vinatieri sort of gave ominous quotes with the idea that maybe he was thinking about retiring. I wonder if you're the Colts, you sort of budge him quietly behind the scenes and say, hey, listen, like, we don't want to embarrass you, but I think this is probably it for you. And we want to make a move without having it be, something that makes you look bad in your final act as a pro player. Maybe you put him on IR with a hamstring injury or a foot injury just to try and give him an easy out. But I do think we're at the point now where, they have to be thinking it, because it might be the difference between the Colts making and missing the playoffs in the AFC.
And what you have is, I mean, you have a player, Vinatieri, who's, I mean, his value lies in certainty, right? Like, we can line this guy up and we know he's going to make this kick for us. If we get to the, whatever, 30-yard line, we're going to win the game. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that's where he's not succeeding at this point. So I think that's what you have to be, that conversation you have to be having if you are the Colts is, can we endure this? Do we have reason to think it will get better? And if not, do we need to make a move, because this has already cost us a couple games and we can't afford to have it cost us anymore? So I think those are kind of the tough week coming up for the Colts, right? They don't know if they're going to have Jacoby Brissett this week off the knee injury, and they got to figure this kicking situation out one way or another. So I guess that's why they pay the GMs and the coaches the big bucks.
Well, I will say this is probably the first time all season we've sat here and said a team had a tough week coming up ahead when they're about to face the Miami Dolphins at home. But hey,
yeah, I guess the week will be tough, but then it'll get easy on Sunday.
I don't know. The Dolphins look, I mean, granted, they're playing the Jets. That was a feisty Dolphins team yesterday. They could have won by more than they actually won by. So, but I absolutely agree. I think that this is a Colts team that even given the Brissett injury, even given the Andrew Luck retirement, this is a playoff team. This is a playoff caliber team, and it's a team that, even if you figure Brissett will probably sit this week against the Dolphins, I don't see a reason to rush him. You have Jacksonville, you're at Houston, you're hosting Tennessee the next 3 weeks before you play the Patriots. You're at the Buccaneers and at the Saints. So three division games coming after a game against the Dolphins. That could make or break your season. And last year, the Colts really rode a second half run, of success to the playoffs. And some of that was beating up the rest of the AFC South. Of course, they got in by beating a weakened Tennessee team in week 17. So you'd figure they have to get this, you know, kind of turned around quickly with the kicking game, because that could end up being a difference maker for them in the postseason. And it could be the difference between them, you know, playing in January and missing out on the playoffs after making a run last season. So I think it's a really difficult situation. With the Steelers, it almost feels like the opposite, where, granted, I think we can talk about the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, the pros and cons of it in the long term. It sort of feels like anything that happens to the Steelers this year, because they don't have Ben Roethlisberger, at least to me, it feels like, you know, it's sort of like house money, where it feels like no one's expecting much out of them, given the injuries up and down the roster. Of course, Ben Roethlisberger being the most obvious one. But it feels like if the Steelers do make the playoffs, which it seems like they have a pretty good chance now, about 1-3 per ESPN's Football Power Index, it seems like they're basically, you know, winning when they're not expected to win. Is that fair? Or do you think that the trades the Steelers have made sort of make it so that they have to make the playoffs this year?
I mean, I think if they make the playoffs this year, Tomlin can ask for a lifetime contract. I mean, this is crazy. They have nothing, and Jalen Samuels caught 13 balls yesterday, right? Yeah. For what, like 70 yards? Like, it was Mason Rudolph is. They had to go downfield late when they were down in the fourth quarter, and he hit a couple throws, but they don't want to ask much of him right now. They didn't have James Conner, right? They're banged up at quarterback and running back for a team that they used to be able to outscore you. I just think for them to win a game like that yesterday, where they were beaten so many different times, like, they just, the psyche of it all, they were 0-3. Now they're 4-4. And I mean, if you had been in that locker room yesterday afternoon, I mean, this is a team, there are a lot of people in that room that have won a lot of games. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when you start to feel the way they're feeling, you become a little bit dangerous. Mm-hmm. They have no business beating the Colts. They have no business being in a playoff hunt the way their roster is right now. But they are, and their defense is making plays, and the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade in September shows the team that the front office certainly hasn't given up on you, and there's a lot of psychology that goes into winning these games. You know, that we live in the age of of analytics and all that, and that's great. I mean, like it all helps us watch the game and understand it better. But there is an element of momentum, and there's an element of how you feel about yourself. And in a league where everyone's pretty well bunched together, that can be a difference maker. I mean, they won the game by what? A point? 2 points?
Two points.
I mean, there you go, on a missed kick. So that's a real win. It counts just as much as if they had won by 30. Mm-hmm. So there they are, 4-4. And Cam Hayward told me after the game, he said, look, we're in the conversation now. Like, we haven't done anything. We still got work, but we put ourselves in the conversation where at 0-3 we weren't. And I think that's a pretty cool feeling if you're around that team right now.
And I'll tell you what, Dan, look at the first three games they played this year. They played the Patriots, who are, even given what happened yesterday, one of the best teams in football. I think it's absolutely fair to say. They played the Seahawks, who have the MVP at quarterback, and they lost by 2 points. And they played the 49ers, who are the last undefeated team in the league. So, you know, that might have seemed a little
23-3.
More damning.
Those teams are 23-3.
That's good.
like
a little more damning, I think, in the moment when we saw, hey, they're 0-3, as opposed to now we look back and say, hey, they lost to three of the best teams in the league. Two of those games were on the road, and they've kind of been pretty good otherwise.
So they got a home game against the Rams next week, tough game. At the Browns, dumpster fire. At the Bengals, 0-8. Home to the Browns, dumpster fire. At the Cardinals, I mean, like, they got the Jets in week 16.
Yeah.
You can't, this is one of those teams, you can't count them out, right? Like, it's like the Seahawks last year. Like, oh, the Seahawks are going to do this downturn and rebuild, blah, blah, blah. And they got a coaching staff that knows nothing but winning. They got players on there that have done a lot of winning. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just respect them. I just think what they're doing is very impressive. A lot of teams start bad and roll over, and they did quite the opposite.
Yeah. I mean, the fifth easiest schedule in the NFL over the rest of the season per ESPN's Football Power Index. In terms of Rudolph, I mean, you mentioned that the Steelers didn't really want to push him, have him push the ball downfield. It was a very conservative scheme. And I think we saw that even in the Dolphins game, where he was really conservative early on in that game. And then when they went down by two touchdowns and they were getting booed, they sort of pushed the ball downfield with more success. Do you think you're impressed with what you see? Do you think, you know, it's just a really conservative scheme for a young quarterback? Is there anything that makes you think, you know, that this is the guy for the Steelers going forward, or is it still obviously, or not obviously, but do you think it's still too early to say?
It's too early to say, and there's a real problem with his game, which was evident if you watched the game last Monday and evident from the press box yesterday. He holds the ball so long. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing about it is, he's somehow able to make the throw anyway late in the down. Like, he doesn't care that he's about to get hit. He doesn't care about, you know, throwing into trap. Like, he waits for something to be there for him, and then he somehow finds it. Mm-hmm. I think it's a dangerous way to play. I mean, obviously, I think you're setting yourself up for big trouble if you play like that. They only get away with it last night, yesterday afternoon, and then last Monday night against the Dolphins. But I think if they can figure that out, if they can start getting that ball out of his hands a little quicker, you know, the success he's having here in the short term can only help him refine his game and get to the point where he's a, you know, he's a bona fide NFL starting quarterback. I think he's a ways away from that, but as we're seeing in a lot of places, they're able to they're able to win anyway, and I think it says a lot about their system and their ability to adjust their game plan given based on their opponent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously this is a really impressive offensive line, one of the best lines in football. And then they didn't have Connor this week, of course, but having Connor, having Benny Snell is going to help Mason Rudolph during the second half of the season. I'm intrigued to see how the offense opens up. You know, I do think they're not going to suddenly turn him into Patrick Mahomes. I don't think that's in the cards, but, you know, are they going to be more aggressive early on in games, pushing the ball downfield when he's had some success? It seems like his best throws typically are the fades and the back shoulder throws down the sidelines. Mm-hmm. He has the arm to make all of those throws, and that, you know, you can isolate that and get the ball out quickly on those throws if you want to decide where you're going really before the snap, if you're reading the coverages properly. So I'll be intrigued to see. This is a Rams team they're about to face where they have a great pass rush. They have a guy in Aaron Donald who, if you hold on to the ball for too long, he's going to eat you alive. And they have corners who, they can get burned, especially, you know, Jalen Ramsey obviously is going to help matters and don't have.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they still have corners? They got the one.
They have one.
Everybody else.
They have one, and he's good. But they're going to have options for sure in that passing.
The other thing to think about with the Steelers, though, and I mean, this is, they're insanely young on offense at the skill positions. Like, yeah, the offensive line is one thing and it's established, but their offensive veterans are Juju Smith-Schuster and James Conner. Those are the guys that that are being looked up to by the other running backs and receivers, and that says those are third-year guys. So that has the ability to, I mean, sometimes when that happens, you play without realizing what you're doing and feeling no pain, and then sometimes the inexperience can show up. So that could go either way there as well.
Yeah, I mean, at 29, Vance McDonald is the oldest player to catch.
Gray beard.
Yeah, to catch more than 10 passes from Mason Rudolph, and he's the oldest by 5 years. James Conner is the next oldest player at 24. So we've seen what the Steelers have done. They rebuilt the offensive line over the past 3 years. They rebuilt the defense. And now in the past couple drafts, they've gotten to fixing or adding those field possession weapons to take after, to move on after from Le'Veon Bell, after Antonio Brown. And we're going to see how those guys develop. I still think we want to see more out of Deontay Johnson, more out of James Washington. But they're making some plays here and there, and you'd figure the Steelers have a pretty good track record of developing young talent. You'd figure at least one of those guys is going to break through and be a viable NFL receiver.
I would think so. The talent is there. Johnson has had some good games with Mason Rudolph. We know that he has a relationship, Rudolph does, with James Washington from college. Juju is not being featured much because, again, they're hyper conservative right now. But, they might, especially against the Rams, they may have to stretch it out and see what they can do downfield. So they have playmakers, just a matter of connecting.
Yeah, and a defense that I think is, you know, playing maybe not at the Patriots or Niners level most weeks, but I think in that second tier of defenses, they're about as good as anybody.
Yeah.
So 34.8% chance of making the postseason per FPI for the Steelers. Are you over that number? Are you under that number in terms of your expectations?
I think it's about right. Look, the AFC is a mess, right?
Like, it sure is.
Like, we don't know who's good. I mean, look, I think we know the Patriots are good. We know the Chiefs are probably good when Mahomes gets back. They actually, big win for them yesterday. Ravens obviously have something going, but the wild card right now, the second wild card is the Colts, who are a game better than Pittsburgh and lost to them yesterday. So, yeah, I think that's about right, but I think that probably can be said about a lot of teams in that conference.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree. I think about 35% is probably where I'd put it. You know, obviously going to depend on what the Ravens do, if the Browns can make a run with their easy schedule coming up, but like you said, dumpster fire might be the word in Cleveland.
Yeah. I'm not banking on that.
Well, you're not banking on it. And that may lead to a change in the months to come with the coaching staff of the Cleveland Browns. And we're going to get to that in our third annual coaches draft. And what we've done in years past, Dan, as you remember, as the fans faithfully remember, is that we will go through the various head coaches of the NFL and draft them based on their sort of relative position on the hot seat. Of course, plenty of coaches who are not going to get fired, not necessarily even rooting for coaches to get fired, more so just let's get a sense of where these coaches are and what might have to happen for them to, you know, be in the same position come 2020. So
now that's the rule, right?
Yeah.
That's what I remembered. Most likely to still have his current job in week one of 2020.
Correct.
That is, all right, I just want to make sure because I didn't go back and listen to last year's podcast, but that's how I remembered it. So I just want to make sure I built my, you know, my draft board based on the right criteria.
I've been grinding the tape. I've listened to it every day over the past week in preparation for this show. But I we're on the same page there. So most likely to keep his job week one of 2020. So do you want to start with the guys who are most likely to keep their job or least likely?
I don't know. What makes for the best theater? I think if we build to the guys most likely to lose their jobs, that's probably the way to go. Start with the sure things.
Okay.
What do you think? I mean, it's not the Dan Graziano podcast. You got it.
Not yet.
Why don't you make the call?
Okay, let's go with the easy. Let's go with the ones who are most likely to keep their jobs. And because I made the decision, Dan, you get the first pick.
Okay. My first pick is Sean Payton.
Sean Payton ahead of Sean McVay. That's really fascinating to me.
Ahead of all of them. I just think he just re-signed. They're loaded. They're primed for a Super Bowl run. I don't know what Drew Brees is going to do, but it seems like Peyton's been so reinvigorated. I don't think there's any chance that he would ever get fired there, at least not anytime soon. And I think it seems like he wants to stick. So it's a bold pick, especially if, Jerry Jones were to come calling. But I think the way the contract is done now with Peyton, from what I understand, he's not going anywhere.
It does seem like, this 5-0 run without Drew Brees, not that Sean Payton needed to prove anything. Not that You know, he not that the Saints aren't going to suffer if they do lose Drew Brees this offseason, but it did kind of give a sense of, okay, this team is still going to be really good.
Yeah.
If it is Teddy Bridgewater, a quarterback. And even if the Saints do win a Super Bowl this year, I mean, I can't imagine a lot of better opportunities or situations for Sean Payton to compete given what the Saints have on their roster.
Yeah, right. Loaded roster. I mean, he's already a hero there to win a second Super Bowl. Yeah, I mean, sit there for, you know, be there, you know, Tom Landry, right?
Right.
Be there Vince Lombardi. Be there forever. That would be my plan.
For sure. I had him number two. I have to admit, I had him second. I had Sean McVay first. I think the Rams would go to litigation if Sean McVay were to try and leave. I can't imagine what it would take. Obviously, Jared Goff has not lived up to expectations this year. I don't think Sean McVay is going anywhere anytime soon when it comes to Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's going to be a running theme here in like the top 10, right, or 12. Like,
exactly,
we don't think any of these guys have any chance to get fired or lose their job.
Right, there's 10 guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, there's 10 guys who I think are absolute, you know, 99.5% locks to stay with their team in 2020.
Or better.
Or better. Yeah. All right, Dan, we'll be back and talking about the NFL Coaches Draft, our third annual Coaches Draft, here in a moment. But first, guys, they say the best offense is a good defense. Now, it's especially true when it comes to the fuel you put in your car. It's time to help keep your engine running like new. Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline is engineered to defend against four main engine threats: gunk, wear, corrosion, and friction. It's our most advanced fuel ever, protecting your engine from those four threats like a solid stiff arm, a huge hit, or a last second block. And like defensive lines, though, not all premium fuels are the same. Now that's fuel for thought. And if you're a Fuel Rewards member, you'll save at least 5 cents per gallon on every fill-up with gold status. If you're not a member, you should download the Fuel Rewards app or go to fuelrewards.com to join and never pay full price for gas again. You can't beat that. And engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Now back to the show.
Maybe a prisoner of the moment, Bill, but my next pick is John Harbaugh.
Wow.
I mean, what he's doing out there is just, and he just re-signed too, right? Like this time last year, he was a hot seat guy, mm-hmm. but then he got his extension, and he's built something around this incredible young quarterback that is the envy of the league. He's got a big game, a big lead in his division, and he just knocked off the Patriots. I think this guy is on an upswing, which is amazing when you think about the conversation that was around him just a year ago this time.
That's what worries me, is that if the Ravens do take a step backwards during the second half, if they miss the postseason, even given that they beat the Patriots, I would worry that maybe they'd say, okay, you know what, we've kind of hit our max here. We're going to go in a different direction. And he's not one of those top 10 guys to me where I
no, really. All right.
He's like, I think I had him 12 or 11. I had him right in the sort of second tier of, I would find it very unlikely. But if the Ravens, you know, if they miss the playoffs and you look at Harbaugh's record and what will he have done at that point, he'll have, obviously a long track record in Baltimore, but
he's had one losing season.
He has one
already
losing
got six
season.
Wins this year.
Right, but...
See, I think... Now, there's a big difference, I think, in a lot of these cases with the way the guy's perceived inside the building and the way that the situation is perceived outside.
Right.
This is a guy who's delivered at a high level for this franchise. They want him to continue to be the coach.
Right.
Like they definitely would prefer it if they have success for a long time and he stays there as head coach.
Of course.
And I think that has to be factored in here. Also, I mean, they got a two-game lead in the division. We already talked about Pittsburgh and Cleveland and how, you know, they're just all a mess. And I think he's a pretty sure bet to make the playoffs this year.
They're in great shape, absolutely. But, I mean, if they don't make the playoffs this year, which is still, you know, I think it's very likely, but not out of the question they do miss the playoffs, then it's been 5 years without a playoff victory. Do it, the Ravens at least think about it? I think they do in a way that the other guys in this top 10 don't sort of engender that sort of skepticism. Although I think obviously Harbaugh is doing a great job. And if he were to move on, I think he would have about 10 job offers in the first day he was free. I mean, I think he's that.
You'd have teams that would fire their coach to try and hire him.
100%.
100%.
Yeah. I went with Bill Belichick with the fourth spot. I know that maybe you have that sort of concern about what happens if Tom Brady leaves. I just think his defense is playing so well that I think Bill Belichick's not going anywhere.
Right. The only question there is, does he decide it's over?
Yes.
Which is the same question that goes with my next pick, which is Pete Carroll.
Yep.
Right? I mean, these are the two oldest coaches in the league, right? Or is Arians? I don't. Anyway, they're two of the three oldest.
Both old.
But so, like, you know, Pete Carroll can have that Seattle job as long as he wants it. The question is, of course, how long he wants it. And then, you know, he's whatever. He's 62 going on 19. So I don't think there's any kind of concern about that. But that would be the only reason these two guys aren't 1 and 2, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think Pete's going to be there for as long as he wants to be. You know, again, it wouldn't shock me if the Seahawks did take a step backwards just because of their schedule during the second half. Russ is playing absolutely lights out, and that's tough to pull off. But still, you know, I still don't think Pete's ever going to get the blame for that there. I think it'll be, you know, if something were to happen, a lot of people would fall between, you know, Pete Carroll and that job as long as he wants it. Even though they played poorly yesterday, I'm still going to go with, I think, the best or the most successful rookie coach of this class so far, and Matt LaFleur with the Packers, with the 6th pick here. I mean, they're in great shape to make the postseason, to win the NFC North, which is a bit of a mess right now. And, you know, the relationship with Aaron Rodgers seems good. This is an organization that typically, outside of, I guess, Ray Rhodes, has typically been very conservative with their head coaching decisions. So I can't imagine what it would take for LaFleur to lose the job after 1 year.
Can't either. I mean, yeah, and having been at their training camp and talking to the GM and the team president about what they saw in him, one of the first things these guys say is, we saw him as not just a guy for now to work with Aaron Rodgers, but as someone who can, you know, be a quarterback guy for us for years to come, whenever that transition has to happen. So that's how the Packers are looking at Matt LaFleur, and I think that's a pretty important thing to keep in mind. And, of course, the red-hot start, the great record, first place, I just don't think there's any danger there at all.
I didn't even know that. I feel even better about my pick now. I would have moved up my board if I'd known that.
I'm happy to help.
That's some late scouting addition. Who do you have at 7?
Sean McDermott.
I like that.
Buffalo Bills. I mean, because a program builder, right? Like, he picked the GM. He overhauled the roster. They are winning. You know, are they going to hold on? Are they going to make the playoffs? Is Josh Allen the guy? A lot of questions. But I don't think there's any question inside or outside of their building about the culture and the program that he has put in place there. I think everybody in that organization feels really good about what he's doing, and I think the proof's in the pudding with McDermott. I think he's had success. He made the playoffs with the Buffalo Bills, you know, 2 years ago. I mean, that is no small thing, as we all know. So I think he's on really solid ground there in Buffalo, and for good reason.
You want to hear a crazy Bill stat?
Yes.
So I was doing some research last night into the Jets, which, of course, everyone loves Jets research. Always fun. And I was looking at how few players they have from who they drafted before 2017. So I think it's 6 players for the Jets who played snaps for them this year who were drafted before 2017. And obviously, it's not even necessarily players who are even that good. You know how many players the Bills have on their roster who have taken an offensive or defensive snap who were drafted by the organization before 2017?
Oh, God. Any?
It's 1. I believe the only one is Shaq Lawson. And Shaq Lawson, of course. I mean, it's the overhaul there. I think we've underestimated it. If you're not looking closely at this team, they have just absolutely, you know, it's been a rebuild to the studs in terms of what they've done with this roster. And they're going to make the play. I mean, obviously,
it's looking good.
But they're in great shape to make the postseason. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what you want to say about Josh Allen, I think you have to give Sean McDermott credit for what he's done with the vast majority of that roster. The moves they've made, again, not 100%, but no one ever bats 100%. And they're about as close as possible in terms of making moves that make sense and improve that football team. So I give him and Brandon Bean a ton of credit in Buffalo.
And Allen, for all his flaws, he finds a way.
He does. You
know, like he's making fourth quarter plays. They might not look right, but they're winning games. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, he's going to be a playoff quarterback. He might be, you know, I think it's still way too early to say what the long-term opportunity there is.
Right.
But, I mean, he's good enough to win with. It's a great defense. Mm-hmm. It's a good running game, but he's also contributing on his side of the ball as well. I'm going to go 8. I'm going to go with the last undefeated guy. He's got a 6-year contract. I'm going to go Kyle Shanahan. You know, the Niners are in love. They went through 3 coaches in 3 years before hiring Shanahan. Obviously, I think if they had struggled in this year, there would have been at least some consideration to making changes. I don't know if it would have been necessarily Shanahan moving on, but, you know, I think he's in line for a contract extension, if anything, after this undefeated first half start.
he's got three more years after this one, yeah, so I don't know. he's already pretty well extended.
The Jags did it, so it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
I think
the Rams do it with Sean McVay, or was that he had 2 years left?
They did it with Johnny Hecker. Johnny Hecker has 5 years.
Well,
right,
obviously you do it for Hecker. Yeah, right. Yeah. There's a guy who's going to the Hall of Fame that we haven't picked yet. I think this is where I got to take Andy Reid.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, why haven't we picked Andy Reid yet? I think if the Chiefs were to suffer a devastating, heartbreaking, crushing first-round playoff loss, which you cannot put past the Chiefs or Andy Reid, you know, could it be cataclysmic enough to make them move on? I say no. But the fact that there's even like a 0.5% chance of such a thing, I think, has to be factored in when we're picking nits here among these guys that are all very, very safe.
Yeah, I think I would have him a little lower than this, because I think there is that 0.5% chance. And I can think of at least one guy where I can't imagine the organization making a move ahead of maybe a couple guys where I can't imagine the organization making a move. The only reason I think the next pick here might not be in the job would be if he didn't want the job, and that's John Gruden, who, to talk about Kyle Shanahan's job security, John Gruden has, you know, 8 more years left on his contract, and he's about to move to Vegas. You know, could he theoretically decide, hey, you know, coaching was fine, but I'd rather go work for a 4-letter prominent cable network and get paid, you know, a lot of money to work 1 or 2 days a week as opposed to every single day?
Mm-hmm.
Crazier things have happened. I would not fault John Gruden for making that choice. But the Raiders, I mean, you know, the way he built this team was he didn't build them as like a, hey, I want to, you know, I want to basically, you know, get this team going quickly, and I want to, you know, do a hot rebuild and be ready in a year to compete. The way he built this team was they got a lot of draft picks. They built around the offensive and defensive lines. They, you know, they built a team that you'd figure is going to be contending in the years to come. And they're doing it. They're 4-4. They're not, you know, they have flaws, not a perfect team. They've had a bunch of injuries that have cost them some opportunities. I think they were expecting to have Antonio Brown, and that would have maybe changed some of their offense given how quickly they get the ball out with Derek Carr. But I mean, Carr looks the best he's looked, you know, probably since that breakout season a few years ago. Their defense is still a bit of a mess, but the running game is great. Josh Jacobs is my offensive rookie of the year. And I mean, this is a Raiders organization where, you know, as bad as they looked last year, there's a lot to like heading into the second half of this season and into that first year in Las Vegas.
Yeah, and I think he was hired to help get the team to Vegas, too. So I can't imagine that they would part ways before that happened. So, yeah, I think, again, sort of rinse, repeat, these guys are all safe. He was 10th on my board. Andy Reid was 8th, and number 9 was Frank Reich.
Yep.
Because I just think that just feels so good about him. And the same thing, kind of stuff I was saying about McDermott, although he doesn't have the roster building power McDermott has. I just think, you know, the sense of calm and, I mean, they lucked into Frank Reich, right? I mean, Josh McDaniels flaked and they end up with Frank Reich, and he made the playoffs his first year. So I think they appreciate that and aren't looking anywhere else in Indianapolis.
Absolutely. I think that they're, you know, obviously was not the first pick there, but I think that's grown to become a relationship that I think is one of the best in football. You know, I think with Chris Ballard and Frank Reich is doing, you know, a great job with the players he has. It's a young team that they've helped develop. Still a lot of draft picks to come. Still a lot of, you know, infrastructure, a lot of cap space. They're going to be in great shape, I think, in the years to come. And a team like we brought it up earlier, they could be 7-1 right now, and with a couple of made kicks from the one guy you'd figure was someone they could depend upon, that and Vinatieri. So I think, you know, Reich is closer to being a coach of the year candidate than he is to being someone who will be out of a job in 2020. But that's for me. We're at the end of the list of guys who are locks. The rest of the guys on this list, at least one way or another,
interesting,
I think, could have a tiny, tiny possibility of a change happening. So I'm going to get to them with you, Dan, after the break here on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, joined again by ESPN's Dan Graziano. We are 11 picks in to our annual Coaches Hot Seat Draft. We've gone through guys who I think we both agree have basically a 0% chance of not being in this same role unless they choose to move on, which was factored in, but I still think it's pretty unlikely come week 1 of 2020. With the 12th pick, though, I'm going to start with a guy who I think basically is safe. I would be shocked if this team made a move, but I could also see the fan base clamoring for one, which might not necessarily mean anything, but I could see the fans getting
very
frustrated.
Oh, I think I know where you're going.
Who do you think it is?
I think you're going to say Doug Peterson.
That is the exact person, Dan, I was going to name. It's Doug Peterson, where this is an Eagles team that, granted, they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Doug Peterson, in my eyes, should have a five-year window where he can do whatever he wants. If he wants to run the wishbone with Carson Wentz, we won a Super Bowl. We are good. I don't know that Eagles fans see it this way. This is the same fan base that booed the Eagles at home at halftime in week one after raising the banner last year for the Super Bowl. And I think that, you know, when you talk with Eagles fans, when you read what the discussions are about the Eagles right now, granted, they are 5-4. I still think they're in pretty good shape to make the postseason. The expectations for this team were that they would win a Super Bowl. And I think that it's fair to say they are, it doesn't appear at the very least, they are on that path right now.
I think they're perceived as an underachieving roster. I think they put a shocking number of eggs in the DeSean Jackson basket on offense. Like the idea that the offense is sort of crippled without him is really, like, that does not speak well of the coaching staff and its plan. But I'm with you. I mean, look, it's Philadelphia. I mean, why can't we win a Super Bowl 50-some years? Oh, he will never win a Super Bowl. He won the Super Bowl. Like, how do you not get a free pass or two? And by the way, he pulled him out of a ditch last year and made the playoffs in what looked like a lost season. So, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but obviously we both think that this guy's going to be fine.
I think so, too. Who do you have at 13?
A less rabid fan base, but, you know, a guy who it could go either way for at times in the past, Bill O'Brien in Houston. Mm-hmm. I just think the program there is he's going to win the division again. Like, I'm sure you wish he had more playoff success, but who's to say he won't with this incredible quarterback they have there, improvements on the offensive line. The J.J. Watt loss is tough, but, you know, he's shown time again. He knows how to coach a team into the playoffs, and his teams probably win more games than they're supposed to, and I think that's the mark of a good and successful coach.
Yeah, I could see 2021 if they take a step backwards in 2020 and look and say, hey, we have no draft picks, and you know, the guy who was secretly our GM who didn't want to be the GM is the one who traded them all away. We don't feel great about that, but I just think given that they are going to be most likely a playoff team this year, I would agree with you. I think it would take a total and utter collapse for Bill O'Brien to be in any serious danger heading into this offseason. At 14, there's like three guys in the same tier here, veterans who have been with the same team for a long time, who I think are generally going to be safe, but I have one little thing in my head that makes me think they might not be.
I think I have the same three next on my list based on that description.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm going to go Mike Zimmer here at 14, where, you know, I mean, Mike Zimmer has been there. He's an institution almost at this point in Minnesota. They're in great shape. Even after losing yesterday, they're 6-3. They're very good on both sides of the football when things are clicking. I do think it's fair to say, though, you know, this is a fan base that I think it's very frustrated by some of the things Mike Zimmer says and does. I think there is that constant sort of strife with the offensive side of the ball. Mike Zimmer wants his team to be maybe in the Stone Ages to some extent when it comes to what they do on offense. They have obviously invested a lot at quarterback and receiver, which seems at odds with that philosophy. But I think as long as Mike Zimmer's team is competitive, as long as they're close to the playoffs this year, I think they'll be safe. I think if they were to just utterly collapse, I do think there would be some element of that organization and of that fan base that would think about a change, which maybe wasn't the case in years past.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And I think the same thing can be said about all three of these guys that I believe you're talking about in this next tier, because I think we have the same three. Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, if the Vikings go 1-6 from here, right, and they finish 7-9 and it's a total devastating collapse, yeah, I could see them making changes. Because coming into the season, you felt like, oh, if they had a bad year, you could see them making changes. They're kind of an all-in team. Their cap situation is a complete wreck going forward. Yep. You know, if it doesn't work now, they probably would have to overhaul some things, and that probably includes head coach. So, absolutely, I don't see that happening. But, you know, crazier things, of course, have happened. And I feel the same way about this next pick. I think this is huge value at pick 15 for an organization that has only employed three coaches in the Super Bowl era. But Mike Tomlin, I think, is in the same kind of situation of it would have to get really bad and really ugly and in ways that really kind of probably didn't have anything to do with football in order for them to move on from him.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing as Harbaugh, where the moment he was let go, I think there would be an element of that Steelers fan base that would be super excited. And then I think they would be very confused because there would be 10 teams who would want to hire Mike Tomlin in about 2 seconds. I mean, I think he, you know, for whatever issues I think fans have with him, I've seen on Twitter in years past, you know, I think there's this idea that maybe his teams play down to their competition.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of evidence for that when you actually look at the bigger picture. I think he's done great work with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think I actually thought the guy you were talking about at first at 16, or at 15 is the guy I'm going to take at 16, who is Ron Rivera, where you have a Panthers organization that typically has been very patient, almost to a fault, with their coaches, with their GMs. They really are an organization that really doesn't make many changes. They've had 4 coaches since coming into the league 24 years ago. But this is, of course, new ownership, and new ownership may not act the same way as they did during the prior ownership period under Jerry Richardson. Now, do I think Rivera should get any of the blame if the Panthers miss the postseason? I don't. I think the defense has been pretty good. I think they're better than the points against mark they have, which is 21st in points per game. But this is a team that hasn't had Cam Newton for the entire season. And I think, you know, if they were going to make a dramatic, drastic change, it would seem more likely they would move on from their quarterback than they would to move on from their head coach.
Agreed. I think that's probably fair, but that seemed like that was the same threesome, right, that you were talking about when you picked Zimmer, 100%. That Tomlin, Rivera, Zimmer.
Yep, absolutely.
That's how I ordered them, and you had, yeah. So.
But now I think you drop off. You're getting to the third tier here, and I think there are reasons to maybe consider that the third tier might drop off, but I think it really depends on, it'd have to be a very unique set of circumstances for at least 3 of these guys for me. All right, we'll get back to more of the discussion with Dan here in a moment. But first, guys, it's officially the holidays, and people are already shopping for gifts. Before you freak out about what to get your boyfriend who you've only been dating for 4 months, listen up. MeUndies is anything but ordinary. They have a gift for literally everyone, and the best part is they deliver straight to your door with free shipping. That's a holiday miracle right there. Speaking of not wanting to leave the house, MeUndies makes the perfect hibernation undies and loungewear. Whether you're looking to match undies with your boo this cuffing season, or just wanting to cuddle up with your favorite furry friend in a onesie, MeUndies has you covered, literally. Their fabric is 3 times softer than cotton and offered in sizes extra small to 4XL. MeUndies knows it's cold out. It's friggin' cold out, and that's why you need MeUndies, because they're coming out with even more cuddly products. This holiday season, you can cozy up in their new robes for men and women. You can treat your feet in their soft new slippers, and of course, you can match your entire family with their soft new baby bodysuit. That's right, MeUndies is now out for babies. With brand new holiday prints and cozy new products, MeUndies has your gift for literally everybody. And MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. It's a no-brainer, especially because MeUndies has a 100% satisfaction guarantee. You can't beat that. 15% off, free shipping, a 100% satisfaction guarantee, and you're not going to need it because MeUndies satisfies literally every person I know who has used this promo code before. And if you want to use this promo code, you can do just that. Get 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee by going to MeUndies.com/Barnwell. That's MeUndies.com/Barnwell, my last name, Barnwell. MeUndies.com/Barnwell. Now back to the show. Who do you have next?
Well, my next guy kind of fits similar to the last 3 we talked about, though he hasn't been with the team as long. But I think he's a guy that the organization thinks highly of as an overall leader, and things would have to go really bad from here on out in order for him to lose his job. But that's Anthony Lynn with the Chargers, and I think that, you know, they're off to a disappointing start, but I think there are reasons to believe they turn it around, and if they do, I'm sure he's safe. But if they don't, you know, you could see. I just think they're very happy with him there. It's his third year. They had the monster year last year and lost, obviously, in the playoffs in Foxborough, but I just think they see him as a guy that sets the right tone.
Yeah, I think that they already made their change by firing Ken Wisenhunt. I would be pretty surprised if they made a second change by also moving on at head coach. Maybe they'll change. Maybe they'll get rid of Gus Bradley. That wouldn't shock me at the end of the year, but I think Lynn is safe there unless, again, like it's a catastrophic, outcome where Philip Rivers says, hey, I'm not going to come back and play unless we get a new head coach, which doesn't seem likely to me.
Doesn't sound like him. No.
No, I don't think that's the issue there. At 18, I think there's a tough mix of coaches here. I'm going to say Cliff Kingsbury.
I think
just because, I think the offense is still a work in progress, but there's definitely been signs of promise with Kyler Murray. I think the Cardinals just fired a coach after 1 year. I don't think they want to get that reputation unless it's, the absolute dream of dream coaches, unless, Nick Saban were to become available or someone, I guess, I don't know, or Lincoln Riley had a particular affinity for the desert and wanted to go coach Arizona. Even then, I just think they're happy with that arrangement. They want some stability there. So I would figure Kingsbury gets at least another year with that offense in Arizona.
Agreed. My next guy is a first-year guy as well. It's the guy in Miami, especially now that he's won a game, Brian Flores. I just don't think you – I don't think you establish this program and then tell your coach, oh, you only get 1 year, right? I just think that would be insane. So I think when you hire Brian Flores, they gave him a long contract, he's on board with the program, and I don't think there's any expectation that he would not be the one to try and oversee the turnaround when all these picks come in and start getting into the mix. So I would say he's pretty safe as the first-year guys go.
Yeah, I think absolutely. The only reason I would maybe give some pause here is we know how Stephen Ross feels about Jim Harbaugh.
Right.
And if Jim Harbaugh, who did not have a great year in Michigan, if he suddenly came free, would the Dolphins get rid of Brian Flores? I think
the answer is yes.
Incredibly unfair, but not out of the question.
I mean, Jack Del Rio said that when Mark Davis hired him in Oakland, he said, if I could ever get John Gruden, you're out. And that's what happened. So, and it's not unprecedented. And that's, you're right. That's absolutely true that would be the possibility.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of coaches who are subject to the possibility of a sexier coach possibly coming over to take his job, I would go Jason Garrett here at 20. I mean, I don't know where to put Jason Garrett. He is the wild card of the sport.
It's funny. I have him here too. It's the exact spot, 20.
But I'm happy, but it's a total.
You could put him in the top 10. You could have put him at 31. You can make the case for any of them.
Right. I mean, there's a chance that the Cowboys win the Super Bowl this year, and there's a chance that Garrett doesn't make it to week 17. I don't know if there's anybody else in the NFL who possibly could have both those outcomes for a team that, by the way, is in first place and looks pretty good, even though they somehow mysteriously, in the absolute confusing result of the season, somehow lost to the Jets.
The Jets. Baffling experience for everyone in the organization. I mean, talked to multiple people in that organization the following week. They just couldn't believe it happened. Look, they didn't have Tyron Smith. They didn't have Amari Cooper. I mean, like, they didn't have their team. But still, the Dolphins beat the Jets. So, yeah, but I disagree with one thing. I do not believe that there's a chance that he doesn't make it to week 17. I think they are committed to getting through this season with Jason Garrett and making the decision after it's over. I've asked this question to high-ranking decision makers there. People named Jones and said, what's the chance that this happens? And they say 0%. So I think they're locked in on that, and they'll make the decision after. Yeah, there's this perception that Garrett has to win the Super Bowl by 35 points in order to keep his job. I don't know to what extent any of that's true, but Jerry Jones loves him. He fits exactly what they want their head coach to be. Mm-hmm. And the preference there would be to have success with Jason Garrett as the head coach for years going forward.
Okay, let me ask you a question, Dan. Let's say the Cowboys finish 10-6. They make it to the playoffs. They lose in the first round. They lose their first playoff game. Let's say Washington goes to the Cowboys and says, hey, we're going to hire Kellen Moore as our head coach. Do you think the Cowboys let Jason Garrett walk so they can keep Kellen Moore as their head coach?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Interesting.
I know, maybe because it's Washington, they would have to, because it's division, but I don't think. People have always underestimated what Jason Garrett is to Jerry Jones. He loves Jason Garrett. Yeah, like it's like he's part of the family, and that's such a huge deal there. And, Jerry would love to be proven right and have Jason Garrett be an all-time, multiple Super Bowl winning head coach. So I think that's the preference. But again, the Yeah, the issue is, what's the number, right? Like, if they go 10-6 and lose in the first round, I think there's going to be an expectation among the fans that that's it, that he's out, they got to make a change. I don't know for sure that's how the organization feels. I think it's possible, but I don't know what it is. Does he have to win 2 playoff games? Does he have to make the Super Bowl, right? So we'll all find out together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's gotten so much more of a leash than any of the other coaches under Jerry Jones, so you'd figure this is a unique case for the Cowboys.
Yeah. It is. It's a unique case.
You're on the board at 21.
I have Bruce Arians here.
Yep.
I think he's, you know, there's always the threat that he decides, you know, we've already seen him do it once, that he decides he doesn't want to do it anymore. But I think his team is okay, and they're losing a lot, but I don't think they're the worst team in the league, and I think mm-hmm. there's probably reason for him to think he can do so. I mean, the big question is the quarterback, obviously, but he seems to believe in him, and if he gets through the season and the turnovers are under control, I could see Jameis Winston getting a contract extension and Bruce Arians staying around to coach him for sure.
Yeah, I think it's more about Bruce than it is about the team. I think if he wants to coach, they're going to let him coach.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, it's very, very rare that you go move on after 1 year. Now, I know this topic's going to come up again here, looking at the rest of this list, but it takes a lot of bad stuff to happen, and I don't think that all that bad stuff has happened in Tampa this year.
Yeah, we're down to, we have 4, 5, we have 11 guys left on this list, and I don't think all of them are going to get fired, but none of them would shock me.
11 is a big number. I don't think 11 gets fired.
Not 11, but if any of these guys lost their jobs, it would not be stunning to me, which means this
Correct.
Is a tough pick here at 22, because it's a big blur. There's sort of two big blobs of coaches. There's one blob here where it's guys where I think they're safe, but I would not be shocked. And then a list of guys where I think it's very difficult. At 22, mm-hmm. I'm going to say Doug Marrone, just because.
Interesting.
Just because the Jags really backed him hard during the Jalen Ramsey thing. They obviously wanted to keep Jalen Ramsey, but they still took what it seemed like Marrone's side and his coaching staff side. I think they could viably move on from a coordinator and keep Marrone. And I think he has a very easy argument, which is, hey, my starting quarterback got injured, you know, on the second drive of the season and missed half the year. And we made it work with Gardner Minshew, who was a sixth round pick or a late round pick who nobody had any expectations for. So I deserve another year with the quarterback we paid a lot of money to draft or to bring into our roster, because if we get our quarterback going, we might have enough to be a playoff team here.
Yeah. And Tom Coughlin's the guy pulling the strings there. That's a fairly stubborn individual, Coughlin is. I think he might be the kind of guy that holds on to a coach even if everybody's telling, maybe especially if everyone's telling him to move on. I had Marrone further down my list than that, but I don't know. Maybe it depends on how the second half goes and how Foles plays.
Yeah, I think absolutely. If Foles really struggles, they could say, hey, why are we bringing this guy? Big mistake. Let's make a different change. But that's going to be an interesting job. I don't know how desirable that job is going to be. And, you know, is Marrone going to be worse than any of the coaches you had when he came, 2 years ago? He was, what, one quarter away from going to the Super Bowl with Blake Bortles as his quarterback?
Yeah. I mean,
they seem far away, but maybe they're not quite as far away as it seems at first glance.
Well, but, you know, windows close fast, right? I mean, Leonard Fournette's going to want money, and the guys on defense are, Calais Campbell's not going to be there forever. I mean, like, they're going to have to make some tough calls in terms of their salary caps. So they already traded Jalen Ramsey. So, I think it'll be interesting to see what that job looks like to people going forward.
Mm-hmm. Who do you have at 23?
Mike Vrabel.
Yep.
Tennessee. I know they like him a lot. But I feel the same way about Vrabel that I do. And you could say the same thing for Brian Flores. I think you could say the same thing for Vic Fangio, who we haven't mentioned yet. The organization is going to make a significant change at quarterback.
Yep.
And if the organization decides that the best thing for this quarterback, whoever he is a quarterback type of head coach, then that puts the Mike Vrabel, the Brian Flores, the Vic Fangio in jeopardy, right? Mm-hmm. Because you decide to just go a different direction. It's the Cliff Kingsbury plan. So, right, Steve Wilks out after 1 year because they needed a coach for the quarterback. So a situation like that, I think, puts a coach like Vrabel, who's well-regarded inside his organization and who they're proud of having hired, at least a little bit of danger.
Yeah. I mean, for a guy who, 9-7 in his first year last year, came within a injured quarterback of possibly making the postseason. This year, 4-5, a lot of close games, close wins and losses either way. Their future obviously still up in the air when it comes to the postseason. But, I think a team that you look at and say, are they – They're sort of struggling in that sort of middle tier. They're good enough to be competitive and win against anybody on any given week, but seem to lose a lot of games they should win, or, you know, never sort of breaking out into that next tier of competitive teams. But, you know, I don't know that getting rid of Vrabel, unless you have a clear upgrade, which I find it hard to believe there's one out there, or there's one obvious candidate out there.
Well, let's say you're going to end up drafting Jalen Hurts, and you want to get, you can get Lincoln Riley to come with him.
Right. That would be the thing.
Like that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's a fanciful. I don't think that's a possibility, but that's the kind of thing we're talking about.
Exactly. I think you need an obvious upgrade at coach to move on from Vrabel at this point, unless they collapse and, you know, the whole thing folds in on itself, which is not out of the question.
Well, that's why he's at 23 and not 13.
That is exactly why he is at 23 and not at 13. At 24, you mentioned the desire to have an offensive coach to mold a young quarterback. And that leads me to Pat Shurmur, who I can tell that you might not agree with this one, Dan. You're a very smart, well-connected man when it comes to the Giants organization. So I'm going to give you a chance to get that out. The only thing I would say is that, you know, I do think that they drafted Daniel Jones with Pat Shurmur in the discussion. And I think we've seen with Marcus Mariota is a good example of this, actually, where having stability for a young quarterback is not the worst thing in the world. So could the Giants move on from Shurmur after this year? I'm going to let you get to that. But I do think that even though they're struggling, even though it's been a disappointing year, I don't think I pin all of that, at the very least, on Shurmur.
No, I don't either. But. And look, the Giants they aren't fire coaches, you know, twice in 2 years,
right?
Three times in 4 years, whatever it is. That's unusual behavior for them. But they're in an unusually bad cycle right now. The Giants have been very bad for a very long time, as you well know. Mm-hmm. Pat Shurmur, you know, yes, you want him to be. If he's the guy, hey, this is the guy for Daniel Jones. But if you look at it holistically and you say, you know what, he's actually not the guy for Daniel Jones because they're not connecting on this level. They're not, you know, maybe we need somebody else in here for Daniel Jones. That's the kind of thing that could make the decision go the other way. Tell me how Daniel Jones is going to play over the next 6-7 games.
Right.
And then we probably have our answer. But if he shows progress, that probably brings Shurmur back. And if he doesn't, that probably gives them license to move on and try something else.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I think, you know, Jones played reasonably well in his last game. We'll see how he plays tonight against the Cowboys. I'm not as hopeful against Dallas, but we'll certainly see. It wouldn't absolutely shock me if the team did move on from Shurmur, but I do think that wouldn't be surprised if they gave him one more year before making any possible changes. But again, I think a lot to be determined there based on what happens over the next few weeks. Who do you have at 25?
Zach Taylor, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Look, it's another organization that kind of operates glacially with regard to making changes. So it doesn't look like Zach Taylor was prepared for this, right? which not a big shock, right? I mean, he was the quarterback's coach of the Rams. You know, he didn't have a lot of responsibility there from what I understand. But he's viewed as a bright young offensive mind. He's got the McVay connection. They're going to probably make a big change at quarterback, whether that becomes Ryan Finley or someone they draft with maybe the number one pick. So if you hire Zach Taylor, you do it for the purpose of developing a young quarterback, and I think they'll give him that chance to stick around. He's down here because he's winless and he's brand new and probably not altogether qualified for the job in the first place, but I still don't know that that's a change that you can expect to make.
That's the thing, right? You know, you think about you're almost definitely drafting a quarterback, unless Ryan Finley's great, which, hey, in that case, Zach Taylor keeps his job because Zach Taylor was the one who drafted Ryan Finley. But let's say, you know, Ryan Finley doesn't seem like he's the guy. Maybe you get a couple of starts from Andy Dalton to end the year, and then you're going to draft a quarterback very high in the first round in 2020. You would try to find a guy who knows Sean McVay to coach that young quarterback.
Right. Hey, you look for like a Zach Taylor type.
Hey, you already got that guy. Save yourself a hire. Wouldn't shock me to see Zach Taylor keep his job for that reason alone. But yeah, I think, you know, I do agree that this has been a disastrous year, from hiring the defensive coordinator and having that be a process to just the offense has looked very inconsistent from week to week. Don't think it's Andy Dalton's fault, but Bengals are just a bit of a mess right now. At 26, I would go with Matt Patricia,
there's only 7 left now. This is about the number, right? This is about how many get fired.
Yeah, I mean, this is the chopping block here. And Patricia, I mean, I think this Lions team is pretty competitive. You know, I do think that we've seen this team you know, they're in every game every week. I can't remember a game this year where they were blown out. I mean, the Vikings game was 42-30, but they were in that game till pretty late. The thing I would say, though, is that they're in these games because their offense is playing well. Matthew Stafford is having a career season. The defense, which is what Patricia was hired to fix and sort of improve, it's bad. I mean, it's 27th in points allowed, points per game this year, down from 16th a year ago. Even then, they were playing a pretty slow pace last year. But, I mean, this defense looks like it's a mess. And we're seeing, you know, decisions that seem a little odd. You know, they moved on from Quandre Diggs unexpectedly. You had your, you know, half dozen players in the defense were confused about it on Twitter. Not a good sign. And I think there was this expectation that maybe, you know, he was going to have more buy-in in the locker room in year two, that he was going to have sort of a, you know, the ability to control that room and sort of garner respect from his players. And I think it's too hard to say when I'm not in that space on a day-to-day basis, but we're just not seeing the development from that defense that I think Patricia was hoping for.
You got that irascibility about him, right? Like, you know, you wonder if he rubs the wrong people the wrong way.
Sure.
Just based on what you see outwardly. Yeah, you're right. I mean, they overhaul the offensive coaching staff, Darrell Bevell, Sean Ryan, I mean, and Stafford and the offense have responded well, but they also sunk a lot of money into that defense, and it hasn't come along, and that's his calling card. So I don't think he's safe at all, especially, and again, we keep saying this, if the second half of the season goes very badly,
yep,
you could see him in significant peril. We're still half a season to go.
Yeah. Who do you have at 27?
Vic Fangio.
Yep.
We've talked about him a little bit and referenced first-year guys, defensive guys. I think probably everything I said about Vrabel can probably be said about Vic Fangio. You know, do they draft a quarterback and decide that they need a different guy for him than Fangio? But, you know, I don't know. He hasn't been very good, and team isn't very good, and they don't really know where they're going from here. So anything's possible.
Yeah, I mean, the defense has been, I think, pretty good. They're third in DVOA heading into last week. I mean, he's kind of covered what you would expect on the defensive side of the ball, but the offense is a mess. And when your offense is a mess, you want someone who's going to develop a young quarterback.
Yep.
I don't know that Rich Gangarella was that guy. I don't know that the offense, as currently constructed, is good enough to win, even with a great defense. So I don't think Vic Fangio's done anything wrong necessarily, but I just think that the Broncos have not won enough to justify locking him in as an automatic person just because his defense has played well. So I think we will see.
Right.
But I think he's the last guy where I still sort of lean towards him staying and keeping his job as opposed to losing it. I mean, we're down to the final five guys here, and I think all of them are comfortable favorites to be out of a job next year.
One of them was the 2018 Coach of the Year.
Yeah. Well,
2018 was last year.
It was last year, Dan.
Is he your next pick?
He is my next pick. Matt Nagy is on the board at 28. And I'll tell you why. I think it's one thing to say, okay, this offense has been a mess. Mitchell Trubisky has taken a big step backwards. And you can pin some of that on Nagy. I think it's absolutely fair. But when you listen to people who are a lot smarter than me talk about the game, listen to Dan Orlovsky talk about this offense, Kurt Warner talk about this offense. I mean, whenever you hear quarterbacks talk about this offense, it is – nobody understands what they're doing. And that's a really scary thing, I think. If it's just, you know, we're trying to stretch Mitch beyond what he can do, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But I think everything that Nagy has done publicly since that missed field goal from Cody Parkey has been either the wrong thing or something that's embarrassed the organization or not made him look like he is in control and a solid head coach. And I know he was Coach of the Year, but we know that Coach of the Year is a very funny thing. Yeah. You can be Coach of the Year one year and be a bit of a mess the following season. So, this reminds me a lot of the, who was the head coach in Chicago before John Fox?
Mark, that's what you're going to say. It reminded you of Ben McAdoo and the Giants, right?
That's an even better comparison. I was going to say 11-5
the first year, and then, I mean, obviously there was a lot going on there with the Eli Manning situation. But I mean, when quarterback isn't working, man, everything can get ugly real fast.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how far the Bears and Nagy have fallen. There's probably no team that has so far performed farther below its expectations than the Bears. And when that happens, you're certainly at risk.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, it would not shock me if this were Matt Nagy's final season in Chicago.
Actually, if there is a team that has performed farther below its expectations than the Bears, it's the Cleveland Browns.
That's right.
And Freddie Kitchens, man, I just don't know. Like, that's my next pick. I just don't get it. And I mean, everybody just says, well, he blew away the interview. Boy, I must have been. I wish he would do that, like, in a press conference.
Yeah.
Right? Like, show us some of that, because I do not understand how that guy blew away the interview. Like, every wrong move out there in Cleveland. And, I mean, a guy acting like he's been there 20 years and knows everything about it and just pushing the wrong buttons. The offense is a mess. The offense is his. I don't know. I one and done is tough, but if you decide we have a super talented roster, this is an unqualified head coach, we made a mistake, then there's nothing to be gained by compounding the mistake and doubling down on it.
Yeah, I mean, nothing about this team says they look like they're just having some bad luck or they're, you know, they're going to suddenly be better. I know the schedule's going to get easier. That might be the only saving grace. 2-6. I mean, they look just totally disjointed and disinterested on the sidelines. They don't look like they, you know, they're sloppy. They're disorganized. They make simple mistakes week after week. And this is going to be maybe a desirable job in some cases. I think it's not as if, not as if this job is going to be good. They're going to lack for possible suitors. There's a lot of talent, you know, in the situation. And there's an obvious head coaching candidate with a history with the GM and Mike McCarthy, who you would figure, you know, is basically, if he's not house hunting in Cleveland at this point, you would figure he is at least, you know, he's at least trying to figure out, you know, which Marriott he wants to stay in if he's going to Cleveland, because he's going to be there quite frequently for the foreseeable future.
I like the West in there, but yeah,
there you go.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was my pick there at, what is that?
29. Three more picks to go, one of whom is an interim coach.
Who you got?
This is tough. This is very tough. There's no good pick here at 30. I'm going to say, oh boy, I'm going to regret this. Adam Gase. I'm a little surprised. I mean, there's a chance Adam Gase is not the head coach of this team by the time we upload this podcast in a few hours. It's touch and go. That's the only way to put it with Adam Gase. And I can't think of a single thing that has gone right for the Jets this year.
No. And the only thing, I mean, Adam Gase might be safer than we think, because remember back in the spring, he kind of consolidated some power. He got the GM out, picked his own GM. It's possible he has enough foundation down there in terms of his standing and his control in the organization to save himself. But he just lost the Dolphins, man. I mean, like, that's a team that's not trying to win games, and you lost to them. Like, if you were 1-15, you got to at least think about it. There's no, I mean, because again, it is just ugly, ugly. I mean, there's players upset that they were even, you know, that even the phone got answered about them at the trade deadline, right? That Kelechi Osemele is in a feud with the team about his medical care and has been released. Like, there's a lot of ugly going on there. And Adam is the guy that's in charge, right? After the McCagnan firing, that was very, very clear. So all that stuff falls on him. And as it piles up, you do have to wonder. And again, half a season still to go, a lot more potential ugliness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, easy schedule, but the Dolphins were an easy
schedule. They're the easy schedule.
The Jaguars
are the easy schedule. The Jets, for the other teams.
Yeah.
that's the problem.
Everyone's circling their calendar saying, hey, we got the Jets this week. This is great. You know, I'm going to, you know, book a restaurant and celebrate Sunday night. It's brutal. And I mean, there's, you know, the argument of, oh, we want that quarterback coach to develop our young quarterback. I mean, Sam Darnold looks worse. He looks absolutely worse than he did a year ago. So
yeah,
it's a hard sell. He's for me at 30. I'm intrigued to see who you pick between our final two selections of 31.
I left the interim guy for last just because I just don't think. I think Dan Snyder is a swing for the fences guy. So I went with Dan Quinn here in Atlanta. This is another guy, by the way, who has a lot more influence in the organization than a lot of people realize. But the depth of the disappointment here, I mean, the fact that it's really kind of a non-competitive team, that the defense has been awful in a year when he kind of took more control of it, I just don't think he can survive this. I mean, I think he's done very well there. He should maybe get a chance to be a head coach again someday, but I don't see it. I think that's the team. That's the next move. If there's another in-season move coming, I think it's that one.
I'd be surprised. I mean, I think if it was going to happen, why wouldn't it have happened during the bye week, you know? I think that would have been the time to do it. I mean, you know,
get another paycheck. I don't know. I mean, it's all guaranteed anyway. But right. I mean, yeah, I don't think they want to fight. I think they like him.
Right.
But, you know, they keep losing. I don't see how it keeps it.
Yeah, I mean, one way or another, it's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, they're at the Saints this week. They're at Carolina next week. I mean, this is a tough schedule over the rest of the way. It's a team that, you know, it's been hit a little bit by injuries, but Dan Quinn's going to lose his job. It's just a question of, you know, is Arthur Blank going to let him coach out the year, or is it going to be a move they make?
There's a Mike McCarthy situation.
Yeah, that's the perfect example where I think it's, you know, are you being nice by firing him, or are you embarrassing him by firing him? And I think you can make a case for either side. That leaves Bill Callahan, the final pick.
He could get the job.
Stranger things have happened.
Well, if people turn him down. I mean, like, and I don't mean to say that to be funny. I mean, but that's not going to be the most appealing job of the ones that come open. So, you know, if they finish strong and if Dwayne Haskins is playing well by the end of the year, sure, I could see them going with him. But I do think that they'll try to make a bigger swing for a bigger name.
Do you think there is a part of Dan Snyder that in his heart, without asking anybody, that believes truly he can convince Sean McVay to come back and coach Washington?
Maybe. I mean, these billionaires are nuts, right? I mean, like, they live in their own worlds, and they can convince themselves of things that are patently untrue just because, like, the people around them never tell them, hey, you're nuts. So it's possible that he believes that, but he's wrong. I mean, when he didn't word a report that, like, Mike Tomlin would be on his wish, yeah, I'm sure he would, but Mike Tomlin's not going to go there. I mean, like, what, you know, come on, I'd be realistic. I mean, look, he'll probably try on Lincoln Riley. I mean, like, he has money. Like, he can outspend everybody, so he'll give it a shot, but I don't know. That's going to be a tough. If you have any kind of decent job, even if it's a coordinator job, to leave it for that mess, it's going to be a tough sell.
Well, we will see. I will go back, or I will have a active listener, if they want to volunteer, go back and see how we do by the end of the year. I think a lot of coaches who, you know, a good tier of coaches who are totally safe, a good tier of coaches who are somewhere in the middle, and then a lot of coaches who have a very interesting final few weeks of the NFL season ahead of them. But Dan, love doing this draft with you every year. I can't wait for year four. But until then, year four, where can people check out what you're doing for us at ESPN?
I'm at Dan Graziano, ESPN, on Twitter and Instagram. I need the Instagram up, man. I need to get some help on the Instagram. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. But I'll be on TV. I'll be on Get Up on Tuesday morning. I like Get Up. That's a fun show to do. Go down to New York and do that show. And then I'll be in Nashville on Sunday for Chiefs and Titans for Sunday NFL Countdown.
It's beautiful. Exciting times. Go follow Dan on Instagram. Strongly recommend that. I'm the wrong person to ask about Instagram advice. I think you're looking for
Mina Kimes. Field or Mina. Yeah, that's a good one. Diana. You want to go some of them.
Social media geniuses. I am certainly not. But Dan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks so much to my guest, Dan Graziano. Of course, an excellent time whenever Dan Graziano comes on the show. And of course, guys, a couple of shows I want you to check out as well. First off, ESPN Daily, which goes up every day with our friend Mina Kimes. If you're not sick of listening to me, you can listen to me talk about the Ravens and Lamar Jackson's performance yesterday and what it means for not only the Patriots defense, not only for Lamar Jackson, but the NFL as a whole. You can check that out by subscribing to ESPN Daily. And also be sure to check out the Adam Schefter podcast this week. Adam always has great guests from the NFL on. Chance to listen to the foremost voice and the foremost reporter, I think, on the NFL these days, and Adam Schefter. So remember to subscribe to the Adam Schefter podcast and the Bill Barnwell Show wherever you get your podcasts. And more audio coming next week, another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. I think it seems like I'll be hopping on the daily. So more audio coming in the weeks to come. But thanks so much for listening.